there is a working hypothesis we might tentatively accept pending further investigation, and that is that somehow, or through someone, a process bearing many of the symbolical hallmarks of medieval alchemy is being applied, unasked and unannounced, to the people of America. This idea is not as far-fetched as it might at first seem. Practically all writers on the subject point out that the alchemist's object was not so much to convert base metals into gold as it was to convert the alchemist himself into an allegedly higher form of man. There seems to be no reason why the concept could not be broadened to include whole peoples or national groups. An inkling of the character of this higher man might be gained from the fact that the so-called magnum opus, or great work of alchemy, was supposed to be the creation of the Androgyne.
You're listening to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. And you're listening to part two of our 9/11 mega four-show extravaganza. 9/11 Conspiracy Theories Part 2, Occult Symbolism. This is where we get into the stuff that I'm interested in sharing with you, my dear listener. Because as you know, that's what this show is all about. A bit of revelation of the method, if you will. Am I doing what they want me to do? I don't know, maybe. Maybe. Part 1, let's do a very, very rapid recap. Part 1 was false flags, pop culture, and predictive programming. We started talking about the idea that this was a mass ritual. We hinted around to it. 911, the number for calling for emergencies, they chose that because you would never forget 911. And then 9/11, the terrorist attack happened, and they said, we'll never forget. They know how the mind works. They know how to wiggle inside of it. And much like Kubrick told you in 2001, A Space Odyssey, there was going to be a transmutation of mankind in 2001, no less. Maybe that's why he died right before he could see it unfold. Then we talked about false flags, Vietnam, Pearl Harbor, all that stuff. And then we talked about PNAC and the neoconservative goals of getting into the Middle East, adding a bit of a rational touch to the argument. Then we talked about symbolism and predictive programming and pop culture and all these sort of different anomalies that didn't make sense. Jet fuel melting steel beams. Passports making it through the gauntlet of... The passport things blows my mind. I mean, maybe. Maybe they found a passport in a bazillion tons of rubble. Whatever. And then even ideas that some of these terrorists, they're not even dead. They had the wrong hijackers. Well, didn't they check all the passports? I don't know. And I certainly don't claim to be the proprietor of the truth here. My takeaway from part one for you, should you consider it, we're not being told the whole truth. I know that much. I don't know what the truth is. Are the conspiracy truther people paranoid? I don't know. Maybe. Are they being overzealous and crazy? Maybe. It's not like that's not in their MO. But I think they've got good reason to. You know, you point to Operation Northwoods and Operation Chaos and MKUltra and COINTELPRO. And all these things sure do fit into the goals, don't they? And we concluded part one talking about Ordo Ab Chao, Order Out of Chaos. It's Freemasonic Skull and Bones idea. George Sr. talked about it in 9/11, not in 2001, but 91, 10 years prior. Talk about the New World Order. They know the power of numerology, gematria, the hermetic law of correspondence, as above, so below. Whatever happens out there in the cosmos can be affected and triggered on Earth. The cosmic trigger, right? So now we're going to get into part two, where we go into the occult symbolism behind what happened. And as you know, I've got a part three and four on deck, book club time. We're going to talk about S.K. Bain's 9/11 book, which I recommend. He was on Tinfoil Hat. Shout out Sam Tripoli and the fellas, XG and Johnny Nice. But 9/11 is a mass ritual, S.K. Bain. We're going to talk about that in parts 3 and 4. Now, I don't know. Should we do more housekeeping? I love the housekeeping. You know I do. I changed up the tiers on Patreon. You can go to my Instagram to check out my full 2-minute video explaining what happened. A bit of truth or drama with myself this time. And you know, Patreon's where you get all the... You know, I've got 3 platforms. You know the whole deal. I'm not even going to talk about it. But I changed up the tiers on Patreon. If you're interested, check it out. Instagram.com/IsaacWeishaupt. Look at the show notes. I got a 2-minute video published on September 1st. You can check it out. Next, let's get into reviews. I've been asking you to do reviews because, look, this podcasting is all I got left. They've censored me off of everything. I can't even put videos on Vimeo. I don't know when they're going to pull the plug and everything else. But podcasting is kind of the thing. And books. I got books. But if you want to leave a review, that's the best way you can help the show out. If, you know, if you don't want to do the financial support, which is totally fine. I get it. Leave a review. I will be reading them. October 31st, 2021, I will not be reading them. So do it before then. I appreciate that greatly. A 5-star, if you feel that way, would be much appreciated. Don't leave a 1-star. Look, if you're trying to leave a negative review, don't even bother. I don't want to see that. I don't need that negativity in my life. But you can leave a 5-star and tell me my nose looks big and stupid. I don't care. Okay, that's it. Housekeeping's over. 9/11 conspiracy theories, part 2, occult symbolism. Now, this perspective, and this is kind of the focus of all of my work, is to look at the occult ritual elements for these events going on all around us all the time. And it's really hard to discern what is going on in our world. But one thing I do know, and I've been listening to this podcast on Francis Bacon. It's fine. If you're into Francis Bacon and occult history, you'd probably like it. I'll give a plug for it. Why not? The Hidden Life is Best is what it's called. It's got some very interesting information about Francis Bacon. Some of it goes over my head. But the idea that I want to float out there is that the Illuminati, we'll call them, this group, this shadow group, the umbrella, the spider, whatever you want to call this, we'll call it the Illuminati. They know they can steer mass consciousness. They know most people are very malleable. And, you know, we're no exception as truthers. We can be malleated. And that's what it's all about. How do you steer the mass consciousness? How do you evolve a whole planet full of human beings? The evolution of consciousness. And the bigger question is it justified? We as human beings need to change. Agents of change. Some people embrace change. Some people reject it. But the truth is that people will constantly change and try to get better. And that's what life's all about. And that's why I'm an opponent to cancel culture. Everyone needs a path to salvation. Everyone needs a path to learning, evolving, treating each other better, all that hippy-dippy stuff. So, like, in some ways, I embrace change. I've gone through lots of therapy. I've read a million self-help books. I don't profess to be fixed by any means. But I can tell you, reaching for the brass ring is something I constantly, personally do in my life, and it's made my life better. From personal experience, I feel that way. I know that. We constantly need to change, evolve, understand, enlighten, learn, research. Continuous life learning is what it's all about. Now, where I differ from the Illuminati is I think, from the research, that they want to evolve us into a Gnostic worldview, believing that Lucifer is king, that God and Jesus Christ are actually the devil. and I'm summing up a lot of ideas and research within a sentence, but that's the basics of it. Now, to bring it back to Francis Bacon, you know, there's lots of claims that Francis Bacon was William Shakespeare. And Shakespeare was kind of the first form of big entertainment. That's why they're still teaching it in high school. That's kind of like his thing, right? And I've never read Shakespeare. I don't know nothing about Shakespeare. But the idea was that Francis Bacon was this... he was the forefather of science. He's the real godfather of all science. And the technocracy, which is the idea that science is the ultimate truth, not God. Science, through man's observations and man's laws and man's thoughts, is the path to perfection, the path to deification, not God. So when they say trust the science, you know that the technocracy is trying to take over and change your mind. They're trying to evolve the consciousness to trust science, not God. And again, not casting stones. I think each one has their place in our world. I'm not a Luddite. I'm not like these Amish folks who say they don't believe in technology, but then they ride their little bike down the road and get on a little cell phone. Jakey Stoltzfus, getting on his little cell phone. And I can make fun of the Amish because I know they're not listening. And if they are listening, they shouldn't be listening. I grew up in PA and I've seen some Amish people, okay? Even they can't live to their values. And that's all right. I don't shame them for it. In fact, you got to appreciate the Amish because they don't try to force their views on everyone else, unlike other religions. Mormons. No, just kidding. Not really. But and there's problems with the religion, right? We're not going to get wrapped around the axles and all this talk. But the big view, the big worldview is that Shakespeare, Francis Bacon, knew that he could teach mankind lessons of philosophy and science and the theocracy and the Luciferian ideas that are espoused by the Freemasons, whether they admit to it or not. The truth of what they call, Aleister Crowley called the sun behind the sun. Talking about Saturn. Talking about the real Luciferian God. And we're not going to have time to get into all this today. And I'm not smart enough to really break it down that quickly. And maybe someday I'll try to deep dive and formulate all these thoughts. I mean, there's just a lot of different points across this vast rabbit hole of Luciferian worship. But the idea is that entertainment is the tool they use to evolve our consciousness. Going back to Shakespeare, that's why we still teach Shakespeare in school. Because Francis Bacon was like one of the first spies, he was one of the first philosophers, he's the godfather of science, he did the bidding of this Illuminati group. And that's what they're doing to this day through Hollywood, through entertainment. And that's why I talked about it in part one, and I said, how curious is it that, I would argue, most films are filmed in New York City, or it's at least known for a very popular place to film. And then we watched 9/11 happen on cameras, and everyone said, it's like watching a movie. Because that was on purpose. It was an occult ritual. It was a psyop, a psychological operation. And maybe, you know, there's a place for the truth to exist. I believe that there's terrorists, Muslim extremists, and they wanted this to happen. I believe that's possible. I don't doubt that. But there's also a heavy amount of evidence that, on some levels, some people let it happen. Why would you let it happen? Well, fulfills the goals and the desires of you and your little Illuminati cronies, you might let it happen. For the greater good, they would say. Because you got to understand the mind of the Illuminati. They think they are better than us. They think we are just dumb sheep. And they're like, well, we'll teach them a lesson. This will be for their own good. And, you know, you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet. But this is how we're going to do it. But the event, the big psychological operation, it had to be like a movie. It had to be. We, you know, in America, our chief export is entertainment. And it had to be traumatic. You couldn't have this happen and not have film footage of it. You couldn't. No one's going to, I bet it wouldn't even hit the news if they didn't have footage of it or pictures or anything. And then they tell you, they narrate the event to you. They tell you what to think. It's the day the world changed. And we know, if you listen to my shows from March and April of 2020, when the virus popped off, when the thing that will never go away happened, you could hear in my voice as well, in my narrative, I kept saying, what are they talking about? Things are never going to be the same, this new normal. I didn't understand. And since then, I've read the Great Reset books, and I've learned a little bit more about globalists and how the whole thing works, and now I get it, right? And in some ways, Klaus Schwab and company, they knew. They knew right off the bat that a pandemic would force everyone to change perspective. And this is exactly what 9/11 was. They told you right off the bat the world was changing. Sorry, the school bus is picking up the dumb kids outside. Very loud. But they're not dumb kids, are they? I don't know. I don't have kids. But it was a ritual. 9/11 was a ritual. Much like the thing from 2020 that will never go away was a ritual. And again, there's a place for truth on both sides. Is there really a virus going around killing people? Yes. Was there really terrorists attacking American targets? Yes. Were these things enabled, facilitated, allowed to happen? That's the big question. But either way, it's the same scenario in both cases. Mankind has to face death. This is the skull and bones ritual. This is what the Freemasons do in the reflection of chamber. This is what the Egyptian mystery schools did. In every secret society and occult teaching, the initiate must face death. You, my friend, are the initiate. We are being initiated into a new world order. George Sr. told you on 9/11/91 the new world order was coming. Then 9/11/2001 happened. George Bush said, the world has changed forever. Never forget. Then another 20 years later, the thing that happened in 2020 happened. And they told you there was a new normal again. Things will never be the same. And I said, why? Why can't things go back to the same? It's because they won't allow it to go back to the same. They're evolving us. They're preparing you to understand. There's a new sheriff in town. But these, like Skull and Bones, which, you know, just happened to be the Bush family. Skull and Bones, they put their initiates in a coffin for the night. Why do you think they do that? The Freemasons got the symbol of the skull and bones in their reflection chamber, and they put the initiate in the chamber. You see the logo of Memento Mori with the skull and bones. It's about remember that you die. To reflect on life, to reflect on death, but it's also symbolic of when you put the mask on, the hoodwink in Freemasonry. You have you're ignorant, you're in the darkness. But then you learn and you become initiated and you come into the light and you've been enlightened. And the enlightenment comes from the horned one, from Lucifer. That's the argument. I believe it. I've read enough to believe that wholeheartedly. They think Lucifer is the good guy and Jesus Christ and God is the bad guy. And that's where they're trying to take us. And they're doing these events or allowing these events to happen or taking advantage of events. One of those three, to facilitate their global plan. And there's an occult tinge to it because that's the idea, is that these occult teachings went underground Only the elites could understand it because the rest of us are too stupid. And the elites, and you know, that's a tactic of the Illuminati learned from the assassins. This idea of assimilation and lying to get the job done, to get the great work accomplished. That's why when people say, yeah, but George Bush is a Pentecostal or whatever. Sure, that's what he tells you. That's the game he plays, because assimilation is the tactic for the assassins. AKA the Illuminati, AKA the Spider, AKA fill in whatever AKA you want. Look at some of the imagery, like the falling. You ever see that photo from 9/11 of the guy falling out of the Twin Towers? Or he jumped, excuse me. Looks just like the Hanged Man of Tarot. And that's what the Hanged Man tarot card represents. That's why the man is upside down. He has a new perspective on the world. Which you'll see in the Roman Polanski film, The Ninth Gate, which I talked about in... When did I talk about that? I don't know. In the last 12 months sometime. That just so happened to be the same image floated around horrifically on the mainstream media. But ultimately, the big takeaway, and we're going to talk about a couple main ideas here, and that's it. And that's all we're going to harp on. We're going to talk about the numerology of 9/11. We're going to talk about the Twin Pillars. Which one do you want to start with? Let's start with Twin Pillars. The idea that two become one, just like the Spice Girls told you in their video, which also, by the way, had the Twin Towers on it. Two becomes one. This is a Kabbalistic idea. And you go back to the twin pillars of Freemasonry and Solomon's Temple, Boaz and Jachin. And the twin pillars of Boaz and Jachin were at the front, the entrance to Solomon's Temple. It represented opening up of a new world, entering a new world. It's the mystical place where the initiate walking in transcends from the material world into the unknown. Which in some ways, if you study, I am a Greek Orthodox Christian, not a good one, but if you read about how the Orthodox Church is laid out, it's a similar idea. You go through the narthex and you're now entering this sort of mystical place. That's why they're all designed to enrich the senses. That's why you have the incense from the censer. You've got these icons all over the wall. The iconostasis. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. It's just the whole environment envelops you, right? And a lot of the non-denominational churches kind of got away from that. And they have like these very bare walls. And, you know, when you go into... If you go into an Orthodox church, you're like, whoa. You're overwhelmed with the beauty of the whole thing. Now, but anyway, and I always talk about this, right, with the occultists and the Christians. There's some parallel understandings of how the world works, how there's a connection to the divine. Other dimensions, other entities, angels, whatever you want to call this. I think there's understandings of the world in both camps. And I don't condemn all schools of occult thought. The only part of it that I do actively condemn is this Gnostic idea of Lucifer as God. Which, if you talk to some more fundamentalist Christian types, they would argue that all occult teachings lead there. And I don't disagree with them. But I'm an awful person and I like to pick and choose. I'm like, well, I like meditation a little bit. And well, I like positive thinking and law of attraction a little bit. And yoga makes me feel good sometimes. Which I'd argue most people can identify with all that. Now, if you go to like some of the more... What do you call it? Staunch Orthodox, like the monks, Father Seraphim Rose, he'll tell you it's all devil worship. He said, don't do none of it. Don't do any of it. It opens you up to influence and possession. But hey, what do I know? So anyway, let's talk about the Freemasons. Oh yeah, we're talking about the Twin Pillars, Boaz and Joaquin, entering the mystical place. And this was just like the, what was it, the Eight Wonders of the World, the Pillar of Hercules? You would supposedly go through the Twin Pillars of Hercules and you'd reach Atlantis. And you can see how this connects with Francis Bacon, because Francis Bacon said that America was going to be the new Atlantis. So 9/11 with the Twin Towers, the Twin Towers would represent the Twin Pillars of Boaz and Joaquin, and it could be just a big symbolic ritual to bring them down and then resurrect the one column, the one pillar from those. But the Twin Towers idea, the Twin Pillars, these represent the opposing forces. One pillar would be the sun, and the other pillar would be the moon. One pillar would be bronze, the other would be zinc or tin. One gold, one silver. And the idea for the candidate, the initiate for Boaz and Joaquin, was that the opposing forces would have to be considered and embraced to have harmony and balance. So again, you've got this idea that, well, it's for the greater good. Bring it down. Bring down the Twin Towers. Scare the crap out of everybody. Get a little privacy invasion. But ultimately, it's for this great utopia where we'll have harmony, balance, and peace. It's for the greater good. Because that's what the original Twin Pillars meant for Boaz and Joaquin. Now, these Twin Pillars were also embodied on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. Kabbalah, of course, being a more Gnostic, esoteric Jewish idea, espoused by the people wearing the red string bracelets, Madonna, Britney Spears at one time, Ariana Grande, who had the Kabbalistic Tree of Life in one of her videos, if you recall. I did have the photo up on my website until I got sued. Thank you very much. Because that's what it's all about. They want to shut me down. They want to censor me. Poor me. The Tree of Life. Yes, the Tree of Life. If you look at the Kabbalah Tree of Life, you can see how it's structured, right? And the Kabbalah Tree of Life is the 10 Sephirot, 10 spheres of God. These are the 10 attributes of God, emanations from the mind, magically creating this tree. And if you look at the structure of it, there's three vertical pillars. You've got strength on one side, wisdom on the other. And then up the center, you got that third pillar, harmony. So specifically, to get specific about it, the pillar of severity is feminine. They also refer to this as the negative pillar. Because you know how these women be, right? Negative. No, I was just kidding. But the severity, the pillar of severity is the feminine or the negative, and the pillar of mercy is masculine or positive. And if you read through Dion Fortune's Mystical Kabbalah, which I don't recommend, it's a very difficult book to understand. I haven't read it. I comb through it when I need to. Because some of these books are very difficult to understand. But in Mystical Kabbalah, it says here, quote, when referring to these ideas, it says, superficially, it may be thought that these attributions lead to incompatible symbolism. And what she means by that is that the idea that women are the more negative element doesn't fit. So she was even throwing shots at that idea. Anyhow, Michael Hoffman, he wrote a book, and we'll talk about that more in part 3 and 4. And he said that Boaz was the mystical New Age Gnosis, and Joaquin, Boaz and Joaquin, Yakin is the authoritarian government of the NWO. He says this comes from the Babylonian Talmud. But again, two sort of different opposing ideas. On one, you've got the New Age woo-woo granola attitude, and on the other, you got the authoritarian, totalitarian New World Order government. Opposing ideas, and the idea is to balance the two and have harmony and go up the center. The pillar of consciousness, the pillar of harmony, whatever you want to call it. And you'll notice the twin pillars on the tarot card for the priestess, one in black, one in white. Again, opposing forces. Which is what you got with the twin towers. One was north, one was south. Opposing forces. And then you balance it out with the one world order. I mean the one world tower, excuse me. Freudian slip. Now, symbolically, with all this equilibrium talk, you have to understand there's this idea of the sacred marriage inside of man. You reconcile the opposing forces. And the sacred marriage is like when the Kundalini snake and the energy channel are joined. What do you call it? One is the receiver, one is the input, right? Making sexy time. Well, when the two forces are joined, talking about the Kundalini snake and the energy channel, it fills the body with the divine light of wisdom, right? It's not coincidental that the Kundalini is a snake. It's a serpent. Now, the takeaway here, all this flowery language, the takeaway here is that the twin pillars, the twin towers, they're analogous here. They have a deep meaning for the occultists and the Freemasons and the Gnostics and all that. It always has this esoteric meaning that the initiate, which is you, mankind, is about to be transformed, about to have the sacred marriage inside the mind. That's why Harry Potter goes through the twin pillars in his first book. He's about to be transformed. He's about to be initiated. He's about to attempt to find the Philosopher's Stone. These are all different ideas about the same thing. Like in alchemy. You want to do the great work and achieve the Philosopher's Stone. You want full enlightenment. You want the knowledge, the gnosis. And we can go back to Dion Fortune's Mystical Kabbalah again. She says, here we meet with the idea put forth by Madame Blavatsky that there can be no manifestation without differentiation into the pair of opposites. And we're going to talk a little bit more about these twin pillars in the book club again. I'm just going to plant that seed for now. And also, James Selby Downard, he's like kind of one of these OGs of conspiracy world. He talked about the psychodrama rituals of the pagans and how the Illuminati puts these rituals on. And this is long before 9/11. He was talking about this stuff. He's the guy who wrote King Kill 33, talking about how JFK's assassination was a big psychodrama ritual, which makes a lot of sense.
The Andragon rules over the conjunction of opposite, yeah. Rules over the change of era time, you see. And it's quite interesting like that this, yeah, like this change of era time, the hippies with the long hair and bisexual practices and so forth show up this change of era time. The alchemist dragon, Nagari, N-A-G-A-R-I, is represented as the Ouroboros, a symbol of primordial strength, and as an andragon. This, incidentally, is a symbolical picture of Nagari. Now, incidentally, the conjunction of opposites represented by an antragyne or hermaphrodite indicates a polarity of forces, you see, as an andragon, male and female in one body. That set of symbolisms is also part of your atomic bomb, right? Now, remember, individuation is the uniting the good and the bad, of the black and white. And the banner of the Knight Templars is half black and half white. It is a banner of individuation. It is so-called Phoenix banner.
This is the Phoenix and the question of the thing that flies or carries its dead to Solomon's temple.
The Knights Templar, in this case, is not the modern Masonic subdivision to which J. Edgar Hoover belonged, but the medieval Catholic order that got involved in so many strange occult activities, including alchemy, according to some experts. Individuation is a term used by psychiatrist Carl Gustav Jung to describe the process by which opposing tendencies of all kinds are reconciled in the forming of a complete human personality. Jung's research convinced him that alchemical concepts seem to be a built-in part of man's mental structure, whether the person in question knows anything about alchemy per se or not. The carrying of the previous phoenix to Solomon's temple is one tradition connected with this ancient mythological bird that was supposed to burn itself alive and be born again within the flames that consumed it. This idea would, of course, parallel the announced goal of the Knights Templar and their modern successors, the Freemasons, to rebuild in all its fabled glory the Jewish world capital in Jerusalem. In this strange and terrible era we live in, we have seen the creation and spreading all over the world of the diabolically devastating force of nuclear energy. We have seen the onset of a frightening series of strategic assassinations among public figures. We have looked on in confusion and consternation at a correspondingly sharp degeneration of public and private morality. But one chapter in this dubious chronicle is yet to be completed, since its principles are presumably still working out their peculiar destinies. Or should we say that Patty Hearst and her cohorts of the Symbionese Liberation Army are still acting out the uncannily symbolic roles that someone or other plotted out for them?
And, also, I don't know if she wants me to say her name. Someone sent me a video. I'll leave it anonymous. But underneath the World Trade Center, there is an Oculus shopping center. And there's eyeballs all around the place. I've seen the video with my own eyes. So again, pointing to this idea, because if you look at the 9/11 memorial, you see it's two black cubes now where the Twin Towers stood, and then the one single tower replacing them. Let's also talk about 9-1-1 numerology for all you gematria geeks out there. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this in part 3 and 4. I'm just going to give you a little bit for now. And we can reference, there's this old fella named William Wynne Westcott. He was one of these magician, occultist, Freemason guys. Founder of the Golden Dawn, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. Studying Kabbalah and all this crazy stuff. But he wrote a book talking about numerology and stuff. And he says that 10 is considered a perfect number. And that comes from the Kabbalistic Tree of Life with the 10 Sephirot. It's God. God is perfect. And then 11 is sinful, not so perfect. Crowley concurred with this because, you know, he was stomping around on the same fields of thought. Crowley said that 11 is the number of magic and that of the new aeon, the new age, the aeon of Horus, as he said. Because you can see all these occultists are constantly ranting and raving about the new age and the new time and man changing and evolution. They all want it. The occultists, the technocrats, the science geeks, they all want it. George Sr., 9/11/91, talked about the New World Order and the 1,000 points of light, which some people claim is the 1,000-year reign of Lucifer that Hitler was talking about with Germany. There's a book called Wicca and Witchcraft And Pythagoras labeled numerology here. And let's hear what he says about 9 and 11. He says 9 is the number for service, as the archetype of the mystic or the healer. And 11 is the number for illumination, the archetype of the spiritual messenger. And in that book, it goes through numbers 1 through 9, and it skips 10, and then it does numbers 11, 22, and 33. I found that curious. And then we got Kenneth Grant. And this is going to be a big old meaty reference I'm going to give you. This is kind of the last big point. But let's go through Kenneth Grant. He had a book called Aleister Crowley and the Hidden God. And he talks about 9 and 11. And I'm going to read you from the book and try to explain as we go along to the best that I can. And he writes, because the number 10 was regarded by Kabbalists as the stable number of the system of divine emanations or Sephiroth, the number 11 was considered accursed because it was outside the system. Therion therefore adopted 11 as his formula. Okay, let's break that down. We already talked about the 10 Sephiroth, the emanations of the mind that God had that created the world, and that's embodied on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. So he's saying you got the 10 Sephiroth, and 11 would be the outer, that would be the other, the adversary, considered Saturn in some cases, which is where you get the black cubes, right? Therion, that's a reference to Aleister Crowley, that's his nickname. So he says Therion therefore adopted 11 as his formula because he was embracing the darkness, the accursed. Because there's some schools of thought by these Gnostics that when you embrace darkness and evil, killing 3,000 people in one day in a big flaming building, when you embrace those things, it shows your adoration for the true God. Because you have to understand, from their inverted worldview, God or Christ that created our world is the bad guy. So anything of this world is really that bad, and it needs to go. So death and destruction only serves to support the true God, the God that's more powerful than Christ. Just like Crowley was embracing. Okay, back to the book. In the book of the law, the goddess Nuit explains, my number is 11, as all their numbers who are of us, which is a direct allusion to the AA, or Order of the Silver Star, and its system of grades. Alright, so Crowley wrote this book, the book of the law, dictated to him from this disembodied spirit, which later he called Lucifer. And the AA, that's the Argentum Astrum, that's one of his sort of secret societies. It supposedly references the star of Sirius, which is called the sun behind the sun. This is represented as the real God. So they have a belief that these entities that they're talking to, and these demons, are spiritual emissaries from the real God, from the Luciferian God, the who they believe to be the good guy. Alright, so there knew it. One of these entities says, the number of 11, that 11, that's our number. Can you see how going from 9 to 11 is a big deal here? When we talk about this stuff, 11 being a sinful number, they're entering into a new age of sinfulness. And you say, why would they do that? Why would they worship demons? Because they don't think the demons are bad. That's why. Crazy, huh? Let's keep reading. The image of the beast, dragon, or seven-headed serpent formed the basal design on the floor of the vault of the adepts in the Golden Dawn. To each head was assigned a name of the clipothic or demonic force, the number of which is 11. Now here they talk about the clipoth. This is the dark shadow of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. I've read that there were 66 demons, fallen angels on this, you know, shadow side of the Tree of Life. They're saying 11 here. I don't know. You'd have to talk to Peter Lavenda. He's probably the only guy that can understand all this crap. another affinity between A.L. and the Tantras. A.L., I believe he's talking about the Book of the Law there. Don't quote me on that. I'm pretty sure that's what that is. Book of the Law is, again, the book Crowley wrote, dictated to him from the disembodied entity named Awaz. And it formed the basis of Thelema, his religion that says there's going to be a new age. Okay? All right. Now, another affinity between A.L. and the Tantras is that the Tantras are accepted not because of their antiquity alone, but because of the proven superhuman authority of their origin. There are other similarities to the Tantras, but also one great dissimilarity, in that the Tantrics, especially of the Sakta division, avoid all use of the number 11 because it's considered inauspicious. This number, which plays a major role in Crowley's cult, has been adversely commented upon by Dion Fortune. Let's stop for 1 second. Okay. So you're probably like, what are you talking about, Tantras and Tantrics? If you read Peter Lavenda's book, The Dark Lord, which I highly recommend, it's a little difficult if you're new to all this, but he talks about these Tantric cults and ties them in with Crowley and even H.P. Lovecraft and all this stuff. And, you know, it's kind of more of the same idea. It's like this idea of that sex magic is much more powerful than we even understand, and the Tantrics understood this, and they took advantage of it, and they could shape the world through sex magic. Where you release, so when you have an orgasm, you release energy into the universe, into the ether, and the trained magician can take that energy, and it's very powerful, and they can, through the hermetic law of correspondence, change the macrocosm from the microcosm. Yes. You take that energy and you focus it, and you can change the world. That's what homeboy, what's his name? I went on Tinfoil Hat for my 10th appearance, record-breaking 10th appearance recently, last month, 2 months ago, and had a sort of debate with, oh man, the name escapes me. What the hell's his name? You know what I'm talking about. I had a debate and he was talking about that, talking about the power of the orgasm and sex magic. Oh, the name escapes me. It'll hit me as we talk. All right, so they're talking about Tantra, and we're going to reference some Dion Fortune again. Why not, right? Here's some more boring Dion Fortune to talk. And they quote from the book. Crowley's magic is... Oh, and before I forget, magic is spelled with a K. You probably know this. K... Crowley added the K to the word magic, okay? To differentiate it from stage magic, he chose K because, again, it's the most accursed number. It's the 11th number of the alphabet, right? Okay. Crowley's magic is valuable to the student, but only the advanced student could use it with profit. The formula, too, on which he works would be considered averse and evil by occultists accustomed to the Kabbalistic tradition, for he uses 11 instead of 10 as the basis of his battery of knocks in the magical ceremonies, and 11 is the number of the Klepoth. No hint of this is given in the text, and it is an ugly trap for the unwary student. It is true that 11 is the number of the Klepoth, the unbalanced residue cast off by, and therefore outside, the 10 Sephiroth. But man has to triumph over these unbalanced forces in his own nature before he can become a master magician. In order to do this, he first has to evoke the Klepoth. Did you catch that? Let's pause for a second. The number 11 represents the Klepoth, okay? The evil. The unbalanced. This other side. These unbalanced forces. And for man to become a master magician, he must call upon them. What better way to call upon these demonic forces than with the world's most massive ritual? Taking the twin pillars, knocking them down, and raising a single pillar of consciousness up the middle, balancing the forces. That's what this is all about. They're evoking the Klepoth, the demons, by knocking down the twin pillars, the pillars of Boaz and Jachin and raising a single pillar up, the pillar of consciousness, the pillar of harmony, of balance. Let's keep reading. So in order to balance these forces, become a master magician, he must do this. So they want these powers of master magician, right? These people are possessed with power, hungry. They got all the money in the world. They need power. They want to create the world. Create this perfect utopia they believe in so hard. Okay, so to do it, they have to evoke the Klepoth, which they do by formulating the averse pentagram, the Star of Set, after he has established the magical supremacy by balancing within himself the five elements represented by the upright pentagram. And that's like, represented as earth, air, water, fire, and spirit. Okay. Balancing everything equally. Equilibrium. The pillar of equilibrium is also another term for that middle pillar, which goes through Daoth. Daoth being the realm of the damaged gods. The entrance to the realm of the damaged gods. The Klepoth, excuse me. The magician is himself the 11th because he is forever outside and beyond the operation of the 10, the two pentagrams, which pentagrams, pentagon, right? Five sides. In human form, this is the formula of sex magic based on atavistic resurgence. Now, Peter Levenna goes into detail on that kind of stuff. It's way beyond my understanding. But if you want to get into like all these strange tantric concepts, that's one place to do it. Crowley, who always maintained a positive attitude, considered also the equally important fact that 11 is the number of the path of Aleph on the Tree of Life, the path that transmits the light of Kether, the Father, to Tipperet, the Son. This path symbolizes the transmission of the supernal light to the Magus, Chakma, by the formula of divine madness. Aleph, the fool of the tarot, is also the mad one. The path of Aleph is the path of wisdom or folly. Aleph spelt in full, a totals 111 on the grand scale. In the Book of Thoth, the letter A is ascribed to the first key. The fool, the mad one, and the serial number of this key is 0. We here reach the root of Crowley's formula 0 equals 2, which is also an ancient Chinese formula. Now, what's she talking about? I have no idea. This is where these books go way over my head. We'll keep reading and see if we can make sense. It says, the sum of unity 1 and its reflection also 1, symbolized by the number 11, is the dyad, the mystic number of the woman, the divider into two, i.e. as mother and child. Which, ironically, in binary, if I remember my binary code, 1-1 means 2? No, it's 1-0. I'm sorry. Disregard. It'd be 3, I think. It doesn't matter. I'm going way back. I don't remember that stuff. That's nerd stuff. Anyway, hence 11, the dynamic form of 2, is the number of that magic which uses the sexual forces and the woman to recreate the illusion of the universe, 1 beyond 10. The word of the law announced by Awas is Thelema, will, and it's expressed in AL in the 11-worded precept, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Alright, now we're getting back into stuff that I understand. The AL, Book of the Law, dictated Crowley by Awas, is where that do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law comes from. And you'll notice that's 11 words, 11 syllables. And there's no mistake here that Dion Fortune was paying attention to that. It says there are also 11 lines on the reverse side of the Stella of Revealing, which is the magical talisman of the present Aeon of Horus, and Crowley became a Magus, 9. And what they're talking about here is the Stella of Revealing is the... when Crowley and his Scarlet Woman went to Cairo, Egypt in 1904, she was led by forces down to an exhibit in the museum. It was, I believe that's the Stella of Revealing. It was exhibit number 666. And that's where a lot of the mythology of the creation of the religion of Thelema comes from. All right, let's keep reading here. Crowley became a Magus. AA with the motto, To Megatherion, the Great Beast, 11 years after he received AL from AWAS. So again, nicknames of Crowley, Megatherion, the Great Beast. So they're saying 11 years after 1904, like 1915, right? The magic of the Aeon of Horus consists in the realization of the identity of Kether, Nuit, and Malkuth, Hadit. The numbers of these Sephiroth are 11 and 10, respectively. Their union in the consciousness of the magician produces Tiferath, the sun, Horus, the lord of the Aeon. The magical formula of the great work, which is the process of uniting these two in consciousness. Let's pause for a minute. You're using the names of these entities and talking about how there's an 11, 10. But the main point here is the union of these things and the consciousness of the magician produces the magical formula of the great work. And the great work is the process of uniting these two in consciousness. This is going back to that Kundalini serpent and the energy channel. This is going back to the twin pillars, Boaz and Jachin. And ultimately, the Twin Towers. It's the magical formula of the great work is to unite the Twin Towers into the one world tower. Okay, Dion keeps going. She says, the magical formula of the great work, which is the process of uniting these two in consciousness, is abrahadabra, the 11-lettered word of power. And Crowley harped about that for a while, too. In the Cephalodium Working, unpublished, I don't know how she got the she got the bootleg Crowley books there. Crowley describes the fortress of House of Horus, the house of God mentioned in AL, as the Aeon of 11 towers. In view of Crowley's references to the worship of Shaitan as being equivalent to the worship of Had or Hadith, it's interesting to compare the 11 temples connected with the sect of Shaitan devotees still existing in the Syrian desert in the neighborhood of Baghdad. Yes, Iraq. Do you see how this all comes together? So now you can see where this all fits together, okay? You've got all this harping about the number 11. The number of evil, and how you need to sort of embrace it. You need to sort of evoke these evil entities. And in this Dion Fortune and Crowley, they're talking about this house of God as the Aeon of 11 towers. And the 11 temples are connected with this group of Shaitan worshippers that they say exist in the Syrian desert. And a lot of these occultists were looking for these folks. William Seabrook, George Jurdeff, all these like Crowley type folks. They went looking for these Shaitan devotees, this tribe. And you may have heard of them. Their name, this religion, is the Yazidis. Peter Levender wrote about them a bunch. And it's very interesting because They're sort of set up in Turkey, Syria, Iraq, and Iran. Just so happens to be all those countries that the neocon PNAC group wanted to get involved with. Coincidence? I don't know. This group, you have to be born into it. It's like a bloodline thing. They're connected in with Zoroastrianism. They are focused on light and dark duality and sun worship. They revere the peacock. They say it represents the executor of God's divine will. Or the unredeemed evil spirit of Satan. Because they believe in this reincarnation bit that you keep refining your soul. I would argue that might be why in Suspiria, in the witch's den there, they've got the peacock. But who's their god? Who are these Yazidis worshipping? Well, Dion Fortune and Crowley say the Shaitan is their god. Well, that's true. They worship the Yazidis worship Shaitan, and that is the Arabic word for devil. And they think Shaitan is the creator of the world. So there you go. They're basically a Gnostic group in the Middle East. The devil's the real god. And ISIS, they were killing these guys. Big genocide thing going on over there. You know, I don't advocate for that, obviously. But so you can read about the Yazidis. But that's where these occultists were obsessed with these people. Existing in the Syrian desert in the neighborhood of Baghdad, which, you know, we did, in fact, go into Baghdad. Did we not? After we balanced this magical formula of the great work, uniting the two twin pillars of consciousness into the one world tower. And that's the gist of it. We wanted to talk to you about 9/11. We did that. We pointed out the connections with the devil worshippers in the same areas that we were wanting to invade, that the PNAC wanted to invade. The psychodrama ritual continues in part 3, where we're going to look take a deep dive into S.K. Bain's book, which it's called 9/11 as a Mass Ritual, the most dangerous book. Well, it might be. It's actually really good. And shout out Freeman Fly. I don't think I mentioned him yet. He predicted 9/11 through these ideas, right? Digging through the research and the words of the occultists. There, and as you can see, like, it's laid out in just enough of a confusing format that most people tune all this out. But they tell you right there in black and white all these ideas. Now, are we being paranoid? Are we seeing something that isn't there? That's possible, right? Let's keep that open. I don't think so. I think everything is a psychodrama ritual, but that's me, right? Everything to this hammer is a nail. That doesn't make it so. I could be wrong. But let's reflect on these ideas in part 3 and 4 when we go through the book club. This is one of the best conspiracy books I've ever read. It hit all my spots, all the spots. And it talks about the ceremony of 9/11. And, you know, S.K. Bain, he's swinging for the fences here. And, you know, even if every single thing in this book isn't true, if some of it's true, it's very, very disturbing. And we'll talk a little bit about, well, shoot, most of everything in that book. So stay subscribed to the show. Come back. We'll hit part 3 and 4 going through that book. And keep continuing our journey of understanding the occult symbolism and the conspiracies behind 9/11. And always have a call to action. There's always something I want you to do. Maybe you want to leave a review. Maybe you want to show your support by going ad-free and getting bonus shows on Patreon or IlluminatiWatcher.com VIP section or Rockfin. Another option, you could share this show with a friend. Say, hey friend, I want you to learn about the occult symbolism behind the world's biggest ritual that you probably lived through. And you can share part 1 with them and they can join us on the journey and you can discuss it at work. Because you know you don't want to work at work. You want to talk about conspiracy theories. So do that. If you already done the other two, or maybe you don't want to do those two, share it with a friend. I'm trying to get these numbers out. We need the people to understand what's going on here. All right, thanks for your time. Thank you for your support. Until next time, stay woke.